is CKUW 95.9 FM, where programming is made by, for, and about the Winnipeg community.
Welcome to Bridging the Gap. I'm your host, Marianne Rose. You are about to embark on a relevant and timely journey of thought with registered psychologist, Dr. Cyrus Dirksen. Thank you for tuning in and expect to be enlightened right now.
Hey there, Cyrus.
Hey, Marianne.
It's good to see you
today. Good to see you, too.
Thanks. Always happy to be here. So one of the last times we had a conversation with our beautiful friend Linda, who came in and spoke to us about her new book, Just Pause to Grieve.
Yeah, it was a wonderful conversation.
Yeah.
So glad she could be here.
Me too. So thank you again, Linda Vickers. And I hope you heard that. If you hadn't, please go back into our archives and check Just Pause to Grieve. And I think we can even see ourselves today as continuing on this conversation because we want to talk about reconstruction versus deconstruction. Yes, we needed to pause to grieve. And some of that deconstruction time is what grieving is. You're seeing what's fallen apart. Your focus is the loss. So that's what you're thinking about and feeling and allowing yourself to feel intentionally. Then to come through to rebuild. Of course, you know, we think of the word construction. Right now, that's the season we're in.
It's a lot going on here, yeah.
Yeah, Manitoba, for those of you who might not know, we have two seasons, winter and construction.
Oh, it's funny, yeah, and it's not easy, right? It's not easy. I often think of deconstruction. I mean, even if you were to take a physical example of a building, deconstruction takes a day or two. If you're just going to take a wrecking ball to a building, it's going to be very quick. Whereas reconstruction takes sometimes years and can be much more challenging and tedious and creative. So I think there is a place for deconstruction, but I feel like it is more challenging and so important and often more vulnerable to engage in construction. It's much more easy to go into a new setting and just be a critic and to tear things apart. But oftentimes that doesn't take into consideration how challenging it is to construct something beautiful, how difficult it is, how it's a formation process, and how easy it is to see the flaws, but can you participate in creating the shine? Can you participate in creating something beautiful? So I think it's so important to try to reframe that and to see the efforts, to see the process, and to be part of it.
Because your focus for the longest time, perhaps, was what was broken and needed to get broken, to get deconstructed, to get hammered down and get rid of. Those types of things were the focus perhaps for a very long time before it even happened. And so then now to refocus, shift your focus from the problem, which was before you all the time, to be able to look at things with new light instead of just like, well, the problem was this, well, the problem was this, and does that help?
Right. Yeah.
Create? No.
Like, if I was to think about parenting and you're thinking about, you know, creating character and instilling values and shaping behaviors and things like that in children, oftentimes we focus on the consequences, we focus on the negative behaviors, and it can be sometimes more challenging, sometimes just not obvious, to construct new, better things. It's like, can you frame things in terms of, like, you did this well, or this is what I would like you to be doing, or the kind of behavior I would like to see, can be so much more powerful for children than just to say, this is where you did this wrong. I think that that does have value too, but it's so important to be able to instruct and build. And sometimes children really struggle with this part. It's like, where am I even going with this? What does the end point look like on what you're wanting to see from me? And sometimes if you can just, you know, show that, a lot of the stuff you're trying to get rid of just falls off.
Especially if you overly hyper-focus on the negative or the problem, and that's what the conversation is about. I heard this once in the way of a sports trainer who had an Olympian that they were training, and it was the discus throwing was the training. They were looking at past videos, and they were pointing out what this Olympian in training was doing wrong. And so they'd get on the field and they would repeat what they were doing wrong. They'd go back and they'd look at the videos of what they were doing wrong. And something clicked that it wasn't working. with the trainer. So they finally shifted and decided to show them videos of Olympians who had won in that field.
Right.
And shown them their strategies again and again. And so what they were seeing improved their playing. So now they were able to do the discus with much better strategy, a different stance, something that helped strengthen them.
That's amazing. What a great example of this idea of looking at the positive, seeing where things are going, and emphasizing that part. Actually seeing somebody who's constructed it well can be so inspirational and so important. It's inspiring. People need to be inspired. And it's not obvious. Sometimes it feels like, well, if I just show you what's wrong, you'll know what to do. But people often really have challenges learning from mistakes. We think that that's something that's a gimme. People will make a mistake, they'll learn from it. But if you actually look at behavior, so many of our human behaviors have been done before, and they continue, they persist. We actually have trouble learning from our mistakes. So being able to show that positive side, it's hard to get there. And then it's so important to really grab that example of like, oh, this person made it. Let's show everybody else what it can look like. And it can be a wonderful inspiration.
And it's the success, not just the cheering on of a fake or a facade, which is a lot of what happens with participation prizes, for example. It's like, you tried. Just the applause of trying. And I'm not trying to be overly critical of that, but there are success stories and the winner. There are successful songs. There are successful athletes, and they did something that was a little bit more than in the participatory field. And like I said, I don't want to be overly critical. But how did they win?
Right.
And what was used? Like, we talked about how you train children. And you used your words. And the power of the tongue. How you can use it to reconstruct. You want to be cautious not to tear down.
Yes. Yeah, we need to move forward with that kind of display in order to build. You know, we're often so desperate to build, we're desperate to create something, and we're often at a loss of how to do it. I have so many people coming to me who are like, I want to create this new thing. I'll use exercise for an example. People will come in and they're like, oh, I want to exercise. I want to do this. And then what they'll do is they'll continually berate themselves. They'll look at negative things. They'll think about how horrible they are. They will deconstruct themselves. And oftentimes, one of the pieces of advice that I give that comes from therapy, from research around change, is to actually focus on why you're wanting to do something. So, for example, researchers in the past will have people fill out index cards with reasons for why they would want to exercise, for example, positive things. This will help me with this. And then they create a whole bunch of index cards, and every morning and night they would read those over. And it's not to force themselves to exercise. It actually is changing your brain by seeing these things over and over and over again. And that would actually create this change of, like, you're looking at the positive. You're looking at this reconstruction. This is the building I want to build, so to speak. And now I actually take that idea and I transform it a little bit. I'm like, well, maybe you could watch a YouTube video or something like that, even more powerful than an index card, like somebody who you believe in, who is where you want to be or has some element of what you want in your life, and absorb it. Fill your mind with the vision of where you want to be rather than berating yourself about where you are. And it's amazing how over time it builds it in your brain. Your brain actually changes into that.
Yeah. Because something healthy and positive is often something we don't tell ourselves about it outside of the experience. So, for example, ahead of time, you are perhaps not yet exercising, but you're telling yourself you don't like it. Except, though, if you were to be in the experience of exercising,
right,
while you're doing it, observe if it feels good, if part of it is enjoyable, something about the experience of exercising brought some kind of enjoyment, and then instead of feeling the anxiety of the thing you're not doing, set the memory of the appreciation. Go after the memory of when you appreciated it and how it felt when you enjoyed it.
Right. Yeah, that's an interesting thing to talk about, is sometimes when you're trying to create something new, it's actually good to think about the feelings you had after it, where you are imagining yourself, people imagine themselves exercising. It's like, don't imagine yourself exercising. Imagine yourself just having finished exercising. That's an interesting switch for many people, is to think about that final product that you're excited about, which is like, I just exercised. Not like I've exercised for a year and I have all the benefits, but it's like, I've just exercised this morning and I'm finishing and I'm walking out of the gym and I just did it. That's actually more motivating than thinking about, you know, lifting the weight or running on the treadmill. So that's another one, is like just thinking about that final place, you know, the building that you want to build, fill your mind with that and the feeling that you'll have when it's complete.
Mm-hmm. And imagining is a huge part of reconstructing.
Mm-hmm.
And you're using your creativity.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps even if the cloud doesn't have a silver lining,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
you're imagining it
mm-hmm.
does.
Mm-hmm.
What about imagining a smell that mm-hmm. something might smell like? I'll give you an example in my own life right now.
Mm-hmm.
My backyard smells like a swamp.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because it needs to be reconstructed. And we have some damaged property right now, and it's kind of got some mold problems and whatnot. And even this morning, I started to imagine the smell of the new yard, and it just brought me joy to think about what it was going to smell like.
Right.
So setting yourself up, even if the cloud doesn't have the silver lining, to imagine it does.
Yeah. Oh, that's good, to kind of see it the way it will be, right? And honestly, like, I think the more clear you can make that, and there's ways you can clarify it, like the clearer you can make that, the more real it becomes and the more powerful it becomes in your life. And so, you know, like the example of making a blueprint of your backyard, what will this actually look like? Trying to make it as concrete as you can. I know in our backyard, for example, I like most of it. There's some mistakes we made, but in those mistakes, I remember being in the imagining process and drawing it out and having trouble seeing it clearly. Like, what will this feel like if we do it this way or if we do it that way? And if I'd seen it clearer, I didn't see it clear enough, it would have been even better. So it's so challenging, but I would encourage you, if you're reconstructing something, to make it as clear as possible.
Yes.
This is where people don't just draw blueprints, they actually have animations of the building, you know, when it's completed. They are clarifying, coloring, they are putting in as much detail and the smell and the nuances that are there in order to be able to be inspired and move forward with confidence and to communicate to others that vision.
Now, I like that you said put it before your eyes so that you're seeing it put down on paper or in a computer program, some way that you can visualize it and getting more and more clear, that the planning becomes more precise, because smelling isn't planning, but it's definitely part of it.
Yes.
And imagination is your first step, but yes, planning.
And then what's scary about reconstruction, what's scary about creating that clarity, is that unfortunately it does create a polarity. So when anybody moves forward with a vision, there will be a rejection. There will be a, oh, I'm not for that vision, I don't want to do it that way. And the more you clarify it, the more polarizing it will be, which is why if you're nervous around rejection, if you're nervous around that place of like, oh, this is who I am, and then somebody's going to reject me, it's actually hard to rebuild. It's hard to move forward. It's hard to create anything, because every step you take in that direction will have a feeling of rejection around it, which demands courage to be able to clarify. And if you don't do that, that's why it's actually vulnerable to create. It's vulnerable to construct. Because once it's constructed, once it's created, or once you've clarified the vision, it is open for critique. It is open for judgment. Any kind of creative process, whether it's, you know, painting something or doing a sculpture, or if you're designing a building, or, you know, reciting some poetry or singing a song, it all creates this experience that can then be critiqued by others, which demands this courage and vulnerability. It's so much less vulnerable to deconstruct. Oh, I don't like that. I don't like that movie. Oh, that's way safer than I liked that movie.
Yeah.
If you say you like the movie, What if everybody else doesn't? And then you're out there and you're like, oh, I liked it. And nobody else did, right? Whereas if everybody's like, I liked it, and you're like, I didn't like it, you're safer. It's less vulnerable.
Yeah, it's easier to critique.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're not getting anything done.
Yes.
It's easier to deconstruct because, like you said, that usually takes a day, whereas the construction can take a really, really long time.
Mm-hmm.
And perhaps you've been through something before where you've experienced failure.
Mm-hmm.
And when you did the failure define your being able to go forward? Well, no, look at you. You're in reconstruction. Whoop, whoop.
Mm-hmm.
And so grace, like for this, but also don't discount the lesson of the failure. You can use that.
Mm-hmm.
It can be part of the story.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not useless that there was.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. One of the strategies for helping with this is when you're nervous about construction, oftentimes you're enjoying constructing in isolation. You enjoy it because there's no vulnerability. So I'll construct in isolation. And so oftentimes when people are anxious about creation, they will do it in obscurity, in isolation. They'll do it for long periods of time in isolation because they're nervous about presenting. And then when they present, when they finally do come out, it's a huge construction with very little feedback in it. Feedback in the process of construction. And so oftentimes it is more off. It is more to the left or to the right or up or down or askew. And so then you have something that potentially took years to construct. So there's a huge sunk investment in it and a huge personal identification with that construction, and then the critique is so painful, so the person just lapses back into obscurity and isolation. So typically what you're looking for when you're engaging in this process is that you are incrementally exposed. You're actually bringing people into the process more frequently. So for example, if you wanted to write a book, don't write a book in isolation. Instead, start with a blog post, and not just a blog post that nobody will see, but a blog post that you're actually sending to people and you're getting feedback on and you're seeing which ones. And if you're like, oh, I don't want to do a blog post, that's too much, well, then maybe you need to do something on X or Twitter or whatever it is. You know, like do something smaller, just do a Facebook post or something. Do something that is published but that took less investment so you can begin to get feedback on what ideas are working. And you can do that with any creative process. And so that when you actually get to the big thing, you know what it is and you know how people are going to react. I mean, maybe not a little bit, but it's much less of a step. And it's much more informed. And it's like, I know these people are going to like it, and I know these people aren't going to like it. And I already kind of know all of those things. I know what I'm building. Mm-hmm. And so it's less vulnerable in that way.
And also the vulnerability and the openness to receive critique means that you're somehow receiving some of that as well. Like you're not so glued, especially if it involves other people, other opinions. You're doing this as a group, as a team. You've got your ideas that you've built, but then you need to let it go to some degree.
Yes, definitely.
And it doesn't mean everything is changed, and perhaps you are the one that makes the final call on it, and then you've got all this feedback, but you're still very settled in your idea, but you've put it out there and you've heard the ideas, and whether or not you weighed them or decided to, it might not matter. But if it is a group that's all coming together and you do need to hear from them and you are building it together, you will need to lay down some of your pride.
Yes, right. You know, and then you're either prepared because you already had the feedback and you know what the negative feedback is, or you can change it and you can actually have something that's different. So yeah, this fear can actually create this terrible loop where it's just something that becomes so punishing when you release it. So yeah, taking those small steps can be a real strategy, whether you're talking about a creative process like painting or writing, like I said, or even if you're talking about something like parenting. This could be a very sensitive thing, but you're creating a person, you're creating a morality, you're creating a character and behavior and stuff. You can see people's challenge with the creative process in their isolationism of their parenting skills. Of like, no, get feedback, get coaching on your parenting, read books about it. Some people won't even read books or watch videos or do any kind of input because they feel so protective of their own creation. And then, of course, you have that product at the end that all of a sudden you have this thing that's out there, and you haven't been able to moderate that or take in feedback as you go, and that could be painful.
I love that you're talking about parenting and this product that's out there, this child that I've created.
This thing that is now released.
And really, it's about building relationship. Mm-hmm. What you're doing as you're building your relationship with your children, with anybody, is that you're not actually the one responsible for who they are and how they're going to show up in the world. They are, as they become adults, but as you're in the training process, you're also building a relationship. And in the process, there's going to be failure. Mm. There's going to be hurt. Mm-hmm. And there's going to have to be a notice and an analysis of that hurt. Which, are you going to take stock of it? Mm. Are you going to consider it as you are looking to perhaps reconstruct what happened in the relationship? Something that, you know, breached, something that broke, something that interfered with the flow of what the outcome of the relationship was hoping to be, would be perfect, impossible. And so how do you shift in the relationship to go back to building?
Yes, which can be so challenging when you've been hurt, when you felt that pain in that relationship. And so I think one of these things that we're talking about in this reconstruction, deconstruction process is this openness. Openness to relationship, openness to building trust, openness to participation and taking advice and loving people through this. And then how do you do that? We do it better together. Mm-hmm. Almost everything, we do it better together.
And I'm looking to be together. I'm looking for the good. I need to now shift my own perspective to what's loving, what's lovely, and what do I love? What's important to me about this person? And I want to pick a value, and I want to focus on that, naming something good, naming something positive.
And it's interesting to think about that construction that we do in our lives as being primarily relational. I mean, normally when we construct something, it's not fully constructed until we've shown somebody else. We usually are looking for it to be something that is relational. It usually feels like a loss or like a failure or incomplete if it's always going to be hidden, which might be a challenge. And I would encourage you to do this, is to do something that will never be seen and see how that feels. And it may be very fruitful for you. But even those things are usually done with the idea that I'm building something in myself in quiet that will eventually, like if I write in my diary, it's going to be something that supports me for something that will eventually come into a relationship somewhere else. It will be health for me. So it's almost always a relational process. So being open to having other people being part of it can be so helpful in healing.
I was thinking about a little bit relational again. When it comes to something that has, like, that we talked about breach and disrepair and this kind of a thing, when it comes to focusing on the healing part, like after the deconstruction. So, for example, there's a deconstruction that's gone on in a relationship, and now it's in need of repair. And there's acknowledgement, and there's repair words that are spoken, perhaps things that are done to create the new. You're reconstructing, you're rebuilding. And what's your part in bringing the healing? And can you see yourself as being that and doing that?
You know, if I was to have a relationship coming in, like a couple coming in, and they were like, okay, we had this problem, but we want to rebuild. We want this to be better. Now, how do we do this, Cyrus? What are the steps that we need to do? So one of the first things that would happen in that situation that I would suggest is actually just collecting information about each other. So if you're wanting to build something together as a partnership or something like that, you need to know who you're building with. You need to know what you're building towards. Like, what do you like? What do I like? Who are you? This can be extremely practical, extremely simple, but also very powerful in that, like, you can get cards that ask questions. Questions about, like, if you could meet anybody in history, who would you meet and why? Like something like that, where you're just learning about how this person sees the world. So there's an exchange of information going back and forth. And this would be a core tenet of friendship building. If you want to build a friend, if you want to build a relationship, just exchanging information strategically and in general, and it goes very deep very quickly. If I was to ask that question, you know, like, who do you want to meet and why? It could be interesting. It's like, oh, I want to meet Einstein or something. But then all of a sudden it'll be like, well, why Einstein? It's like, oh, well, I want to meet Einstein because I love to learn and I love curiosity and I've always had a thing for, like, being able to see things that nobody else can see. You can all of a sudden get into really understanding the core of who somebody is. Mm-hmm. And that would be a beginning in a relationship, of relationship building and constructing something with somebody else. And it's always changing. So you might be like, well, Cyrus, I already know the person. It's like, no, you don't. Respectfully, I knew them yesterday, and it's like, well, you don't know them today. Most of the time it's more like, I knew them 10 years ago. Well, you really don't know them today. People are always changing. And so this is a process that you can do again and again and again. And once you've got some information, the next step is typically to do some kind of exchange. And that would be like where you're asking the other person to take care of something. You're taking a risk with giving a responsibility. And it could be simple like chores, or it could be something like more personal. Like, can you give me words of affirmation? Can I tell you a secret? Can you give me your advice? Where you have a need in your life and you're having the other person take responsibility for it. And that's a risk. And so you're taking these risks and then you're meeting each other's needs slowly over time. Mm-hmm. And that partnership then grows. And that would be another big step in understanding who you're dealing with and reconstructing a relationship.
And kindness is really important in that process. Mm-hmm. If you have this hope and desire for them to show you kindness, then when they're talking about how much they like Einstein, for example, that you're not going to like, I don't like Einstein.
What a dumb choice.
It's just like, oh, okay, well, you know, put that aside that you don't like him or for whatever reason or something that you don't, you know, just to be able to, instead of focusing on the negative, you focus on the positive.
Definitely. I mean, validating and perspective taking are so key to understand somebody and then to be able to meet needs in that person, which is usually what relationships and constructions are about. If you construct almost anything in this life, it's usually to meet a need of some kind. I've renovated offices, it's usually to meet a need of some kind. If you're building a relationship, it's to meet a need. And so you have to do that with that in mind. And to meet a need, you have to understand the person you're meeting the need for. And that exchange has to be... So kindness, because usually when we have a need, we have something missing. We have something that's vulnerable. And so you have to have that kindness. And then you have to be able to see that need and take that perspective, imagine it. And then to actually build trust by having that process cycle through a few times to be like, oh, I actually met the need. Thank you.
Oh, I love it. Well, thank you, Cyrus.
Thank you, Marianne.
Well, that was an honor to get to spend that time with you. Appreciate you tuning in. Please check out more of Dr. Cyrus at maplecrestchurch.ca and at drcyrusdirksen.com. Thanks again, and tune in next time for Bridging the Gap. I'm Marianne Rose. Thank you.